Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Like, I can't understand a word he says. He mumbles. He sounds like he's on, you know, 15 Ambien when he's on the show.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
And then they trash him and say he's a fucking pill-popping, you know, pothead or whatever when he left. I don't know if it's his misshapen body or his shorts that are pulled up over his belly button, his stupid sandals. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
There's a monster in my pants, and it does a nasty dance. When it moves in and out, everybody starts to shout.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and joining me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
JR, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. And how are you on this fine Monday evening?
Doing well. A little tired.
A little tired, yeah. The last week of August, or August. Yeah, right. Feels like it sometimes over the last week, though.
Mm.
The last week of October. Welcome, everyone, to episode 170 of the Place to Be podcast. Yes, 3 decades, well, away from the big 200.
Almost there.
Almost there. We got some things in our minds, but be patient. We'll get there. We got plenty to do between now and then. Lots of fun stuff.
Yep.
Tonight is one of them. All right. Now, as everyone knows, since, when did we start this little concept?
It's a while ago. Yeah, it's been a while.
I'm talking probably, what, like April? May? Something like that. May, June, something like that. We have gone through, piece by piece, through many avenues, the single greatest year in the history of professional wrestling, and that is, of course, 1997. And tonight, in the Vintage Vault, we give you the final chapter. Not the final thing, period, because we do have an epilogue, which we'll do next week, but tonight is the final chapter of the story. And before we do that, why don't we see if he's in here? I'm sure.
Hey! What is going on here?
Same stuff as always. Get out of the way, Tubby. All right. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault and the Place to Be podcast, we have had many bright days in 1997, but on this night, we're going through the darkest of days.
Are you ready?
The showstopper.
Sexy.
The main event.
HBK.
The icon, Shawn Michaels, battles Ken Shamrock for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
DX can play anyone for a sucker!
Triple H.
Triple H.
Artillery I'm not gonna use.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley battles Sergeant Slaughter.
I'm gonna save that for your old lady. And it's the big...
Oh, girl.
Degeneration X.
I want you.
That's a sickening.
I need you.
How low will these human beings do?
Come play with me.
Degeneration X rules the wrestling.
Generation X.
Degenerate me.
The big bazooka.
Buzzing.
Yeah, I'll take a swing by your house. Give your wife a smoke of the peace pipe.
Yes. Did he do the bang in the skins line yet? Or that might have been later on in the year. It might have been into next year. Of course, tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we have finally reached the final pay-per-view of 1997. In your house, Degeneration X. As if you couldn't tell from the promo, since right. It was said like 11 times.
And now, just for those people who did see it on the Facebook page, Jason Greenhouse was supposed to join us tonight. He was actually live in the arena, but he's having some technical issues. There was interruption with the line. It did not sound healthy or good in any way that would be tolerable to listen to. Jason, of course, is fantastic, but the phone line was not. So we'll have Jay on again in the future. He's always one of our favorite guests here. Of course, one of the biggest fans of the show. So we will have Jay on again. Just wanted to get that out there, and now we can move along.
Yes, we'll miss you, Greeny, but of course we will have him back on again. A lot of people were telling you that over the last 4 weeks, huh? Or you were saying that to others. Yeah, I'm sure the conference rooms at Titan Towers in Stanford were not the most pleasurable place to be during these 4 weeks. Are you ready, boss?
Mm-hmm.
December 7th, 1997. Happy birthday, by the way, PIC.
Thank you. Birthday number 17 for me that night.
Right.
Me and Andrew Flanagan holed up in the bedroom watching the show.
I love it. All these other times you get to sit in the living room with your buddies or with your boy, with Papa Gazzo, and on your birthday you got shoved in the hole.
Like I don't know why we're at. There was a stretch here where we were having VCR issues with the cable box downstairs. Like I was having trouble recording things off that, so that's probably why. Maybe we were upstairs, so the VCR worked better. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
times were different, children, back in 1997.
Yes, yes.
These things were hard to come by and hard to connect. Things were not easy.
No, they weren't. Live from the Springfield Civic Center in Springfield, Massachusetts. Or as our good friend Dr. G called it this weekend. Never mind. Anyway, Massachusetts, your home state. And by the way, the one of the few pay-per-views.
Did you say my home state?
No, I said the home state of the show is what I meant to say. Yeah, if it came out that way, I apologize. No, certainly not your home state. That's for sure. Okay, then it's because of that, Dr. G, as we were coming back from New Hampshire this weekend, we nicely called it Assachusetts. So. Being a two Yankee fans, I'm sure you appreciate that. All right.
Fuck it.
That's what it sounded like, that's what it sounded like before. But
to do worse than Josh Richter.
Oh, speaking of Red Sox fans. He'll get us a little John Farrell t-shirt. Anyway, we'll talk about that on the headlines. All right, anyway. The Springfield Civic Center, JR. I'm going to cheat because when we were doing this earlier, I was way off. But I'm going to cheat now since I know now. Springfield Civic Center opened right about the same time as my beloved New Haven Coliseum. I think it was kind of the surge of Northeastern arenas that opened up in the early 1970s. A little background on the Civic Center.
Opened in 1972, of course. Home to the Hartford Whalers for a couple years, the Springfield Indians of the AHL for about two decades, and currently the home to the AHL Springfield Falcons and the D-League Springfield Armor.
Yes. And it was both when the Whalers were the New England Whalers of the WHA. And then for a couple of years in the late 70s, when the Whalers were already in Hartford, but before they were in the NHL, they didn't join the NHL until 1980. But before that, they had to play a couple of years in Springfield because for the Connecticut natives, like Mr. Pfeff, the Civic Center, actually the roof collapsed after a blizzard in 77 or something somewhere. And the Civic Center was closed, so they did have to play in Springfield for a couple years. They were still in the WHA at that point. They didn't get to the NHL until 1980. So, and there have been some legendary concerts there, and as JR said, plenty of hockey over the years. And, of course, it was the host of the old Springfield Hall of Fame game in college basketball. It would always be the first, before the days of, like, the Great Alaska Shootout and the Maui and all that crap. It was usually the first official college basketball game of the season. We usually have two top 10 teams in it, you know, Carolina, Kansas, something like that. Now it's, of course, called the Mass Mutual Center, and it houses, for the next 2 years, as well as last year, the MAC conference tournament. So your attendance, including Mr. Greenhouse, 6,358, close to a sellout, I believe, JR, correct? Was the capacity there?
Yeah, for concerts, it was 8,500, basketball, 7,500. So
yeah, about the same size as the New Haven Coliseum, maximum about 9,000.
And so, the same amount of people care about it.
Not a bad crowd. Yeah, buy rate 0.44, and Mr. Sunrise Musical Theater, with your little your announcers, and you'll get quite used to them from here on out. The voices of the era to come, good old J.R. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah, really forming a solid team at this point. I thought they were good at Survivor Series, and rewatching the show today, I thought they do a really good job here, getting across some new storylines, some new characters. And they're kind of, this is almost like a reintroduction period. It's like the reset button was hit after Survivor Series. Like, all these storylines and angles, except for one terrible one, was, you know, edging along throughout the summer of 97 and were the focus of the promotion. And all of a sudden, they're all over. And now it's like all this new stuff is involved. It's a new look, a new feel. And it, like I said, it's almost like a complete reset of the promotion. It's very interesting.
Well, like we said, I'm sure things within Titan Towers off Exit 9 in Stamford, Connecticut, just a scant 5 or 6 exits away from me. Probably not fun places to be in during these last, 4 weeks after what happened in Montreal. So kind of, as mentioned, you had mentioned that the previous night from this pay-per-view, you were at a house show at your beloved PCC. And
yes.
Even you were saying that there was a little, just things just felt odd, you know, off.
Yeah, it did. It felt this very kind of dark and dead. Like I said, the Undertaker was supposed to wrestle and he wasn't there. You know, Bret Hart was gone. The promotion just really felt like it was slowly dying at this point. And it was kind of sad being at that house show. Jim and I were very much like, wow, this is like the end of an era right now. So things felt very bleak. Scott, do you know who sponsored this pay-per-view?
I'm trying to remember if it was a candy bar or something like that. Was it M&M's or Snickers or something like that?
It was Milton Bradley's Karate Fighters back again.
What a big shock. I had a feeling, but
they
got
bumped from Survivor Series, though. They got bumped over to the December pay-per-view here.
That's right. I have a feeling that I was at a pay-per-view or at a house show close to that as well, JR. I'm looking at, by the way, our good friends Graham Coth on the history of WWE.com. I believe there was a New Haven pay-per-view kind of in the same time period. I'm trying to think. I remember going to a pay-per-view in
I don't think so, because in the Northeastern stretch here, they go to Maine for Raw the next night, then they're in Durham to record the next week's Raw, then Bangor, Maine, then Lowell for the Christmas Raw.
Oh, you know what? It was the end of the year. It was the end of the month. It was December 30th.
Okay.
It was a Raw taping for May, for the first Raw of 98. So
yeah,
never mind.
Okay.
So it was a little bit. I knew it was sometime in December, but it was towards the end of the month. I knew it was somewhere in December. I remember going. So, okay. Let's dive in. We don't have a, by the way, couple things. First, follow along with us. Bigelow34.proboards.com.
Yep.
JR, would you like to know what you watched that night in Providence? Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor. Jesus Castillo, Miguel Perez, and Jose Estrada defeated Chains and 8-Ball. Skull, what a shock. Kane pinned Vader. Ken Shamrock pinned D'Lo Brown. Legion of Doom and Dude Love defeated Farooq Kama and Rocky Maivia. Flash Funk pinned Matt Hardy. Matt who?
Mm-hmm.
WWF tag team. Some team took on the Headbangers.
Yes.
And in the main event, we won't tell you who that team was. And the main event, here's the match you were talking about. Stone Cold Steve Austin defeated Hunter Hearst Helmsley. So I guess you had said something about the Undertaker was supposed to be in that match. And
yeah, he was supposed to be involved there. And Austin and Helmsley actually ended up.
Or you weren't sure which guy Austin.
Yeah, one of them replaced one, and then they ended up actually having a casket match, those two, so it was very odd.
It's kind of like the 93 Survivor Series when Sean's with Knights?
Yeah, it's very weird. And I remember Austin like came out of the casket and started fighting Helms. It was very weird, and it was just a way for them to try and pop the crowd after. I mean, I'm sure Taker was never supposed to be there based on the storyline, so I'm guessing it was a false advertising deal. But not knowing that at the time, it definitely felt like things were headed downhill. So, all right, why don't we get going here?
Yes. Yeah, let's get started. All right, in our opener, and I love, you know how I am, I'm a big mark, I'm a mock for belts. A new belt being introduced on this evening, JR. The reintroducing of the World Wrestling Federation Light Heavyweight Championship. Belt that went back to the 80s. Guys like Dynamite Kid, Tiger Mask, all those guys.
It's funny, you're a mark of belts, and the last time I saw you dressed up, you had like a brown belt, black shoes, green pants.
It was like 9 months ago. I forgot that the belt was reversible, and I forgot to reverse it, okay? It's kind of like...
what happens when you develop glaucoma.
Yeah, exactly. Huh? So we have, of course,
and dementia.
When you have a vacant title,
yes,
would be an EJR.
A fucking tournament, baby.
That's right. So why don't you give us the brackets and who we would be seeing in this opening match in the finals of the tournament?
All right. Well, over the summer, we saw very many various light heavyweights debuted on Raw. They were kind of just having random matches, trying to see if there's any interest in the division. And they decided to go ahead and forge forward. So they brought back the old light heavyweight championship tournament and belts and tournament. And it kicked off on November 3rd from Hershey, Pennsylvania, as Aguila defeated Super Loco. In Ottawa, November 10th, Taka Michinoku, who of course we saw Canadian Stampede, defeated Devin Storm, Indy Darling. November 11th in Cornwall, Scott Taylor defeated your boy Eric Shelley. November 24th in Fayetteville, Brian Christopher defeated Flash Flanagan, a member of the vaunted Flanagan family. Rides around in the Flanavan with Andrew and his parents.
That's right.
November 25th with the semifinals as Taka defeated Aguila and Brian Christopher advanced over Scott Taylor. And the finals were set for here. December 7th in Springfield, Mass. Taka, Michinoku, Brian Christopher for the vacant light heavyweight championship belt.
And you could never get Andy's brother to play basketball.
No.
All right. So here we go. Your opener, Taka, who, of course, was the leftover, allegedly, or at the time, in that arrival of... in July.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? His name just totally escaped. Maybe it is the dementia. The name totally just left my mind.
Grace Suzuki.
Grace Suzuki. Thank you. Oh, my God. Wow. Look what you did to me. Maybe it is the glaucoma. Great Suzuki came in and he brought Taka as his own, you know, guy to face in the match. And of course, they would have two great matches.
Yes.
Course, yep. At Canadian Stampede and the next night on Raw. But Suzuki, through some avenues, we won't get into what we mentioned a lot on that pay-per-view, on that vault, is not here.
Right.
And here is Taka, who was a pretty good soldier. And they thought, wow, this guy's pretty good. Pretty good wrestler. Let's keep him around.
Yeah, they gave him a big contract, a lot of money. So.
Yep. Brian Christopher, of course, we saw at Ground Zero when Scott Putski's knee turned to jello. And he was gone. And we were talking in pre-production, JR. I wonder if Putski was slated to win this tournament originally. They seem to have a big push for him. Good-looking guy. Pretty good wrestler. Not great, but you know, not bad compared to what they would have in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he was in line originally.
I'm sure he was going to be involved. I doubt he was going to actually win. I think this was either Taka or Suzuki's tournament to win, honestly. So
yeah. Also,
Brian Christopher, of course, the son of Jerry Lawler. So that banter continues on throughout the entire match here, where Lawler keeps almost slipping up or denying it, and Jim Roski's plugging away and poking at him and trying to, you know, get him to slip up. So witty banter.
Yes. Now, and do they, because there was one point where they would eventually like settle in, like one would call, like they would just call each other by their last names, Ross, Lawler. So they were, in terms of like the melding together as a team, I don't know if they were quite there yet, but,
Well, no, they're not like the friendly buddies that they'd become, but they are melding as a team of commentators.
Right. Exactly.
They have a pretty good rapport here.
Now, of course, we've been talking since pretty much the end of 96 that, you know, Vince was trying to get all the Lucha stars from Mexico and try kind of like jazzing up the beginning of the tag division, the light heavyweight division, smaller guys. The problem was this was the one thing that his competition, Mr. Bischoff in WCW, had already cornered the market on, as we've talked about extensively, JR, as you have said, through Bischoff's connections with Conan and. And what is it, AAA or EMLL? I forgot which one. I think it's AAA.
No, AAA is the WWF one. I can't wait till 97 ends so I can stop answering the same question on every show.
Well, they're all the same. EMLL or whichever one it was, he would get all the best, the top talent, you know, the Super Kalo and Psychosis and obviously Rey Mysterio and all those guys. So Vince would always get stuck with the leftovers. Well, here he actually went to another country of extensively good small talent, and finally got a gem in both Sasuke and Taka. The problem with Sasuke was a dope, and Taka, you know, towed the company line. So,
I
really like this match. I thought these two guys really did find some good chemistry together. I think the commentary, as you had mentioned, was finally melding, and I think it helped the match. Of course, anything involving Brian Christopher would work well.
The only problem I have with this match, though, is you're having this tournament to solidify this new division, this new title, but then you include Brian Christopher, who isn't really wrestling a high-flying, you know, cruiserweight, lightweight style. He's still wrestling like a ground-based style, and he's a big guy to be involved in this division. I almost feel like they should have saved him for a feud down the road and really gone all out with the match here, and I feel like they should have had, you know, Taka face, you know, Devin Storm, you know, Aguila, you know, one of those guys here to really just go all out and wow the crowd like they did at Canadian Stampede. And that's how you get the division going. Not with basically a heavyweight match with two lightweights. That makes sense?
Yes, I agree. No, I mean, it all comes down to style when you're dealing with light heavyweights. When you're dealing with guys this small, you want to see some crazy flying stuff. I mean,
right.
Big example, there's a DVD out there. Well, I'm sure there's a few of them out there, but this one in particular that I own that I got on eBay was the 1994 Super J Cup tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And perfect example, all guys small, between 180 and 215 pounds, going crazy. There's a semifinal match in that tournament, which would be won by a guy we would talk about in a couple of years. Won't get into him now. Between, I believe it was it Great Sasuke? I believe it was Great Sasuke and Jushin Liger. That was just ridiculous. I mean, planches over the top rope, over the floor, and into the crowd. Crazy leg drops onto barricade. I mean, it was crazy. So when this was being pumped up and when this was being promoted, you were expecting really some great high-flying stuff. And you're absolutely right, JR. You didn't see that. You saw a good match.
Right.
But not
I'm not saying they needed a five-star classic, but they needed a train wreck, you know, like we get to open Nitro every week. That's what we were looking for here. Not for Brian Christopher for work rest holds and, you know, his high flying was a leg drop off the middle. You know, it's like he wasn't doing anything revolutionary. And Taka had to kind of dumb his offense down a little bit. And like you said, they have good chemistry and the match is fine. I just think Christopher would have been better used in a regular feud, not in the inaugural, you know, title deciding match. So
right, exactly. But one of my favorite finishers would be used to win this match, and Taka would hit the Michinoku driver.
Yes.
Love the finisher. Would become your first World Wrestling Federation light heavyweight champion.
Yeah, so a lot of stock being put in him. A little part of me was surprised Christopher didn't win here, and they had Taka chase a little. I was surprised they put the title right on the face. But I think they really wanted him to be the torchbearer of the division, the guy that they could tote around the world as you know, their international flavor. So I think that was the idea here, that they could kind of send him around, and it would look good for publicity, and a guy that they thought could really... a young guy that maybe, you know, fans can relate to that could carry the division.
Yes, I concur 100%. And he would be around for a while, and he would hold the title for quite a while. So there you go. In a match a little over 12 minutes, good 12 minutes. But as mentioned, I concur with JR that when you watch it, you'll be like, it's something not totally right about the match. And it's because it's wrestled more of like a regular... I almost feel like they tried to make even the light heavyweights wrestle the basic World Wrestling Federation match.
Yeah, that's it. I don't think it had more to do with them forcing them into it. I think it just had more to do with the guy they put in there, and that was Christopher. I mean, he's a fine talent. You know, at this point, he was a good worker. It just kind of defeated the purpose of what they were going for. That's all.
I agree. So there you go, Taka Michinoku, your new and first World Wrestling Federation light heavyweight champion. Love the belt. Red leather, kind of had a little old school NWA look about it. Kind of liked it. So there you go. Taka wins the title. Our next match, I really just want to just hustle through.
Still going.
Los Barriquas, no longer wearing the Banana Split outfits, driving the truck. And the DOA, the Crushless DOA. Now it's just Chains, Skull, and 8-Ball.
Yes.
Taking on the Los Barriquas. Of course, Crush. We all know what happened to Crush.
Yep,
I mean, I know we got into a lot of it in the last one, so we don't have to get into it extensively now, but of course, after what happened in Montreal, an exodus of wrestlers left, disgusted at what had happened, of course.
Yep, and Crush was one of them, yes.
Yes, he left, you know, he would head it to WCW, and he would probably be in the NWO sometime before the end of the month at some point. So, which leaves these two teams and... Did anybody really give a shit at this point? Honestly. Did anybody?
No. I mean, the crowd is hot for this whole show. I don't know if it's because of the size of the arena, the shape of the arena, the echo of the arena, but they were hot, and they're really into this whole show. Even this match, kind of. Not really, but kind of. And, this is done. Like, these two teams are still warring. This has been going on since, you know, end of July. The Barrique was still beating the DOA, which I didn't get here. I don't see why they even needed the win. I don't know why the DOA couldn't finally get a victory here. It didn't make much sense to me, but, just not much going on. I mean, I don't think there's even much more to talk about at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same punch kick crap that we've seen from these. It's just nothing new.
The Gang Wars were finally going to taper off as these last few weeks of 97 edge on. I mean, these guys would stick around in different incarnations here and there, but the Gang Wars that we've known them as are pretty much dead here. So thankfully, but I mean, it's just time. You know, we're going to talk about this probably as the card goes on and at the end, but the roster was very thin at this point. They've been depleted by injuries, by defections, by guys that, you know, bolted after Montreal. So they were really hurting at this point for talent depth, and that shows. And that's why these guys are thrown back out there to eat up another 8 minutes of pay-per-view time that no one wanted to see.
No, absolutely not. So there you go. Los Pericos win, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Next up, we have another opportunity or another attempt by mm-hmm. Vince to kind of jack up the mainstream a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, what's been going on in the last month, he needed some positive publicity. So he brings in this guy, signs a contract with a guy who has been making the rounds. Now, I don't want to say he's not a legitimate boxer.
Right.
But
yeah, a bit of a gimmick guy.
Yeah, kind of a gimmick guy. Real name Eric Esch. Mm-hmm. But we know him better as Apollo Creed. Yes. Of course, known as Butterbean, who was the big, large, bald guy who just... It was almost like Tough Man competitions.
Yeah, he was. And that's exactly where he burst into popularity, was in the Tough Man scene. Yep. Kind of developed a bit of a cult following and then got into boxing in 1994. He's a 5-time World Tough Man Heavyweight Champion. Was 56-5 with 36 knockouts, and then got into boxing. Like we said, he had a pretty good record early on, and you know, was a novelty guy. You know, I don't think he was anyone that was ever going to be a guy that carried a division or, you know, was a major champion of any way. But he was a big enough name for Vince to bring in here, and of course made his debut, and showed up on Raw in a couple weeks leading up to the show, and he actually was like talking to Sable at ringside. And Mark Mero, who we talked about at Survivor Series, had a bit of an attitude problem here. He was not happy at all with the way Sable was gawked at and leered at by fans and other wrestlers. And he was getting very paranoid, very jealous. And he was slowly, slowly over these weeks turning into a heel. And here he was not happy with Butterbean talking to Sable. So he steps in, gets involved, and ends up challenging Butterbean to a fight here, to a boxing match, actually. So
yes. And obviously, as I said, this was an attempt by Vince to kind of get a little mainstream publicity. Yeah. And I don't want to say it failed. He signed a two-match deal. So Vince was smart to not overload it.
Right.
Just a kind of simple thing. Two matches.
Although I wonder, I bet there was some interest by both sides. I wonder if they were kind of testing the waters to see if this is a guy they could bring in and turn him into a wrestler. I've never seen that anywhere. I'm just kind of wondering by the way they were using him.
Most likely, maybe it was just, it was a chance for Vince to kind of go into the mainstream. Mm. And on the other side of the coin, maybe Butterbean wanted to try and get the wrestling audience, which, kind of an odd time right now, but what is he? He doesn't know what's theater workings. He has no clue. So I'm sure there was mutual interest. The problem with this match was I'll say Butterbean wasn't over, but the crowd was, they kind of cared, but
yeah.
They really care, you know? And secondly, Mark Mero is not quite over yet. Maybe if this was another 9 months from now,
right?
This might have worked.
He was getting there. And, I mean, he was actually getting pretty good on the mic, and he was really starting to berate Sable. And actually, the weeks following this is when I think he'd really start to develop his mic skills. But he, he was berating Sable whenever he got the chance. He was getting in her grill and kind of, tossing her around. And that's where Butterbean really got involved. He would, He did an interview on Raw saying he didn't like bullies, and he saw Mero as a bully. So, he came to Sable's defense, and like I said, was chatting her up, and Mero just wasn't happy. And this plays into Mero's history as a boxer. Of course, they always talked about he was a Golden Gloves champion, so that's why we had the boxing match here. And this actually goes, specifically a Tough Man match, but basically a boxing match. It goes 10 minutes, and we get multiple rounds, 3 rounds complete and full. As we get 10 seconds into round 4, Mero has enough. He grabs, like the step stool or something, and he just clocks Butterbean with it, I believe, or the step ladder.
Yep, no, with the stool.
Yeah, okay.
Hits him with the stool. So, now, when you look back at gimmicky boxing matches, boxing wrestling matches, you think of, as a matter of fact, JR, this past weekend, I managed to catch on a side note that the 30 for 30 on ESPN, what is it called? The Real Rocky, the one about Chuck Wepner. And, of course, they also talk about his match with Andre the Giant. And then, of course, you have, Andre and Muhammad Ali and Inoki and all that kind of jazz. And, of course, the pay-per-view one most people know is, of course, Mr. T and Roddy Piper. Yeah, we all kind of laughed at it, too, when it was on at WrestleMania 2. That one, at least, you had two guys who kind of knew boxing and were able to kind of – this was just – it was a lot of, at least it took till the end of the Piper T fight before they started wrestling and it started looking fake. This one just didn't look good from the beginning. I don't think Merrill wanted to get hit. It was just a big mess. It just really was. I don't know if it was just the wrong time.
I don't know!
It just wasn't good. It wasn't good. I think it'll... I don't know either, Lexi Fleck, Lexi. I mean, it pumped up Sable's popularity, which was growing by leaps and bounds to begin with. But in terms of these two, I don't think it really did much for either of them.
Yeah.
Butterbean would not...
It's not much. I mean, it's nothing... It's nothing special. It's not... Yeah, it's not even like a good brawl. You know what I mean? It's just they don't seem to really mesh. And
yeah, exactly.
I mean, Mero, I like Mero, and I like where the heel turn goes. But it just, like you said, he just wasn't fully there yet for this kind of match. And I think it helped get him some heel heat. I think it was a wise idea to do it. I just don't think I don't think it had the payoff that they expected. That's all.
So there you go, Butterbean. Wins by DQ. Total runs. Right. By DQ, a little under 10 minutes. 9:56 total. 10 seconds into the fourth round. So we're just going aggregate total time. So, all right. Before we go to the next match, we start to see the full turn of the artist formerly known as. And he has a main squeeze now, a different squeeze. We didn't talk about it at Survivor Series. Of course, Survivor Series, he was on the babyface team of the USA versus Canada match, although really wasn't doing much of anything.
No, he had the arm in the sling, and Vader smacked him in the head and kind of smacked him around. And then he would show up in a wheelchair, and he started to claim he was an invalid, and he couldn't do anything, and really just over-the-top kind of preening and just kind of fucking with people. A lot of the mind games had returned from him, and just getting very, very weird. And on an episode of Raw, he came out, and he had a nurse with him, and supposed to be taking care of his injured arm, and the nurse would end up revealing herself to be Luna Vachon, making her return after a lengthy absence. Actually, she's been gone since, what, 95?
Yeah, right? She left...
She was with Bull Nakano in 94, then she was with Bigelow as well. And
she was Bigelow, yeah.
Yeah, it was like late 94, early 95, I think she was around till. So, first time back since then, and now she's now Goldust's new main squeeze, the woman that he dumped Marlena / Terry for. And that segment with Vader was actually pretty cool. Goldust pulled a hammer out and smacked Vader across the skull with it. So, that feud is still going on, and Goldust actually is let out here. He's wearing a green bodysuit with pink underwear, and Luna's like walking him on a fucking leash, and he's got the ball gag in his mouth, and he ends up reading Green Eggs and Ham. It's just an odd fucking situation here with Goldust. I don't know what. I mean, it was interesting on one hand, but it was just bizarre on the other.
Yes, and I wonder if he was booking this himself, or I don't know what was going on here. Very, very weird.
I mean, I think it was needed because I think he was getting very stale and just very blasé in that face role, and it wasn't really inspiring. So I like it in a way. I mean, it's something new, it's something different, and very, very weird, though. Very weird.
Yes, I concur. And they're both in pink underwear, reading yes. Green Eggs and Ham. Very, very strange.
I'll never look at Dr. Seuss the same again.
No, and I wonder if they're wearing the pink underwear as a homage to Brett. Who knows?
Or as an homage to Josh Capron.
That is quite true, yes. God. All right. Next up is our second title match of the evening. And it is for the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championship.
I've been watching you for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man can need and never ask for. This is love. This is more.
We were all together at Rutgers, but it was fairly sad.
I saw Greg Schiano down at Rutgers. So I saw you with my man.
Exactly. Of course, we're talking about my beloved Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom. Now, the last time we saw them, JR, they were the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions.
Yes, they was.
But now they are the former.
What?
World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. You think it's hard to say. I think I feel.
I know. You must be heartbroken. It was the final time. Maybe. Yeah. We'll see as we go along, but it could be. On November 24th, yes, on November 24th, the world was shocked as the upstart duo of Jesse James and Billy Gunn captured the tag team titles. Of course, we saw these two guys had formed a team in the Survivor Series. They were the sole survivors of their Survivor match, and they goaded the tag. They baited the tag team champions into a match, and Legion of Doom gave them that match. And the newly christened New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, Jesse James, stole the tag team titles. And, you know, I thought at the time, and I think many other people did as well, that it was kind of a temporary switch just to pop the ratings and that the LOD would get the titles back here. And as we'll see, it didn't happen. And I didn't think that... Did you think the Outlaws had lasting or staying power at all?
At the time, no. I'll be honest with you, I did not. They seemed like kind of a... It was almost like the babyface version of the Headbangers back at Ground Zero. That they were just kind of a heel team. You need to get a heel team in there, kind of start the arc going towards, you know, the new year and into, of course, you know, the story arc towards WrestleMania. So my assumption was they were just a heel team that would hold the tag titles until some, whether it was LOD or somebody else, would usurp them and take the titles in March. That ended up not happening, and we'll get more into their evolution.
Yeah, I definitely didn't see this. I was just shocked at the time, and I did not think this team would last as champions. And especially since Legion of Doom had just won the friggin' titles, you know, like a month before, after that long odyssey of 97 trying to capture them. They finally get them, and then they barely hold them. So I remember being pretty surprised, and I thought for sure it was just, you know, a quick switch, and LOD would get the belts back here. But it does not happen as Henry Godwin comes in and ends up leaving a slop bucket in the ring. Hawk uses it and draws the DQ, and the Outlaws retain. But, you know, they're a unique situation because they were almost left to go sink or swim on their own as a team, and only almost because of the fact that they were left alone to their own devices is kind of how they get over. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I do. I do agree with that. Unfortunately, I was less thinking about them and more thinking about the other team because I know I kind of misquoted myself a few pay-per-views ago, but it was just – it was hard to watch. It was hard to watch. Just their de-evolution or devolving from childhood for me, from when I first started watching wrestling, my favorite tag team of all time. And they just looked just broken down.
Yeah, but looking at it objectively here, though, don't you feel like that this was the best use for them?
I agree.
Okay.
From a storyline and from a creative perspective, absolutely. But it just was hard to watch them. Not losing. Losing's not. I'm not talking about losing matches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. But they just weren't even looking good in the ring anymore. I mean, we're not talking about two work rate geniuses. We're not talking about, you know, the Brain Busters or, you know, or the Heart Foundation or anything like that. But at least they were able to carry a good match and drew a lot of energy, and they still did to a certain extent here. And of course, as you said, the Springfield crowd kind of hides. I don't want to say hides, but it's a little devious. Yeah, a little
Mr. Fuji. Yes.
I was gonna say deviance, but it was a little I can't think of the word. You're kind of thrown off by the crowd. You're thinking, wow, these matches are amazing, but the Springfield crowd, like our good friend Mr. Greenhouse,
deceiving. Maybe you're looking for.
Deceiving. Thank you. Good word. That's what I'm thinking of. Not devious. Fuji. yeah, it was. That was terrible, but that was Fuji anyway. Probably didn't sound right himself. This crowd really gets the match going, but it's really just because the crowd is great. The match is just not good.
No, the match is nothing. Yeah.
And I can't
believe the Godwin thing is still going with the Legion of Doom. This fucking thing started forever ago.
Yeah, I know. But I was just, it really bothered me. Just hard to watch him just not, I'm not worried about losing. They lost matches in their prime. Losing matches doesn't bother me. Just not having that same juice anymore. I know they're getting older. I know that. And
they have a winner!
Well, they weren't that old. But they, you can obviously see that they're just, they're breaking down.
I'm just glad Vince was using them. At the time, I honestly was as upset as you were. I couldn't believe that they lost, and I was pretty upset about it. But looking back, I mean, this is really just the smartest way to use them. Put over a young team. Whether you thought at the time that this young team could fully succeed, who knows, but it doesn't hurt for them to win the way they did and pretty much dominate this ongoing feud with the Legion of Doom the way they do. So, yeah, you know, I think it was shrewd. I think it really kick-started the Outlaws as a team, and you know, we'll see where it goes as we, you know, get through these reviews. But at the time, it seemed very, very questionable and very controversial, but we'll see if it pays off.
Yeah, and also, I wasn't a big fan of the ending, you know, with Hawk getting caught with the bucket. They're usually not caught looking dumb, and the whole thing just really bugged me. But in any event, the New Age Outlaws, Jesse James, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, 1G, Badass, 1D, retain the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships, winning by disqualification. Just stupid. Precipitates a rematch, unfortunately. But at least for me, the LOD got to stay in the title hunt, if only to put over this team. So far, we're halfway through the show, and it's just we had a great opening match. I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know how the crowd here in Springfield actually could keep their energy level, because these last three matches have just been...
It's a weird show. It's more about atmosphere and feel and change and unique feel to the promote. It's more than just the wrestling on the show, you know, and I don't know if that's going to start a trend or not, but it really is more. This is like a novelty show in of itself. It's a show that you focus more on the landscape and overall change to the promotion than you do the matches. It's just a unique look. If someone asks you, like, what is the dawning of the era, you know, that comes after this 97 Bret Hart, where you can say it was the beginning of Attitude, Vince McMahon did his promo. To me, this is that real transition show between where the Federation would go and where they were coming from. To me, this is the bridge of the old era and the new. I think the whole year of 97 is a bridge, but to me, this is the final step. And it's very dark and very weird, but you can see the beginnings of things to coming and starting to form, and you know where they would head. So,
yeah, we'll get more into both these teams over time and the direction they go as we head towards this new era, as continues to be discussed and grow. Our next match is
weird,
yeah, in many ways. Sergeant Slaughter, who is, of course, the commissioner of the World Wrestling Federation. There is no president, really, anymore.
I want to smoke the peace pipe.
Yes. Got the big bazooka.
What did you think of Slaughter this time, though, as far as commissioner goes? Did you like him in the role? Did you miss Gorilla? What did you think?
Well, you know, you look at the two roles between the two shows. You have Slaughter on Raw and WWF, and then at WCW you had J.J. Dillon, who was kind of like the Van Helsing to the Dracula of the NWO. And J.J. Dillon at least had a little legitimacy to him. I feel like Slaughter was nothing more than a foil to put over DX instead of DX actually having to be reined in. All of Slaughter's attempts would just be foiled by, you know, silly antics and cheap parlor tricks and stuff like that.
Yeah, he was made to look kind of goofy and out of touch.
Like a dope, yeah.
But someone that wasn't really aware that it was happening, it was odd.
Yeah. Yes, I concur with that. So, to try and rein in D-Generation X, of course, the other half, the main half of DX wrestling later on in the evening in a very important match. Here, Slaughter tries to take on the other half.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this moment to be knocked off my feet a year, 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I can finally not have to say the full long name anymore.
Yep.
For the first time, I can actually call him Triple H.
Hunter Hearst, Chris Colo.
Oh, well, at least he's the wife of the team. Thank you. I appreciate that. Just call me PIC Scott Helmsley.
Yes.
well, as one of my betrothers, the Legion of Doom going down, one is on his way up.
Yes.
I can't believe I walked into that. I know. I tried to say it fast enough.
I'm going
to
let it go.
That you wouldn't slip one in there. Anyway. Oh, God, I did it again. Jesus.
You're going to calm down. Go take a shower.
I'm getting like LaRue here.
All right, go take a shower. I'm going to give the background for this one.
Oh, jeez.
Go take your filthy shit-filled body in that room.
All right.
All right. November 17th. A lot going on. November 17th, DX confronted Sergeant Slaughter in the ring, Commissioner Slaughter, because he kept giving him a hard time about the childish antics. DX attacked Slaughter and beat the shit out of him, repeatedly beating him down with Rick Rude's briefcase. And then in a memorable moment, they ran him across the ring and just smashed him across the head. And this was actually a pretty infamous episode of Raw because Rick Rude would become the only man in wrestling history to appear on both Raw and Nitro on the same night. He was on Raw because it was taped. But in the time from when the show was taped to when it aired, he actually defected, angry over the Bret Hart situation, was not happy with Vince McMahon at all. He was actually one of the most vocal supporters of Bret Hart in this whole mess. And he jumped over to Nitro, so it was a little slap to the face and another nail in the coffin of a time period, like I said, where I thought WWF was dying. This was another thing that kind of hit them hard. Rude showed up clean shaven on Nitro, and on Raw he actually had a beard. So it just really made WWF look pretty stupid. By the next week, DX is out there trash talking, saying they fired Rude and all this other stuff. And Rude was actually just working on a verbal agreement, had no contract. So he really stuck it to Vince, said he was jumping ship from the Titanic after they screwed Bret Hart, and he joined the NWO. So not much they could do there because, of course, Raw was taped, and he was actually on Nitro before he even appeared on Raw, so it made things look even worse. November 24th, DX actually invited Jim Neidhart, still lingering around, they offered him a spot in DX. Neidhart actually accepted and faced the crowd with his hands raised by Michaels and Helmsley, thinking he's part of the group, and then trying to drop down a low blow the anvil, some more humiliation to the Hart family and the Hart Foundation. DX beat him down until Slaughter made the save, but he got his ass kicked as well. On December 1st, Triple H took on Jim Neidhart, who was trying to get revenge in a match that Helmsley won easily. But after the match, Sergeant Slaughter and Ken Shamrock ran in, and they all beat the crap out of DX. Slaughter had Triple H in the Cobra Clutch. Shamrock had Michaels in the ankle lock, and Anvil was detaining China. So, kind of funny that they had Anvil still involved, because that would actually be his final episode of Raw, and he jumped to WCW as well after that. So, it's almost like they kind of humiliated him on the way out the door, knowing he was leaving. But kind of weird that they let him get that last little hurrah of retaining China. But that was a pretty hot finish to Raw, and I thought this feud was pretty good. Helmsley was really good on the mic leading into this match. All the things we've been saying, the bazooka and the peace pipe, and he was saying all that stuff. They're really, really, prodding Sarge, and Sarge is pretty much just doing his own thing. And he actually comes out in the camo for a promo and kind of cuts an old school Slaughter promo on Triple H. So I thought the mic work leading into this was good, but again, Scott, I think this match is a prime example of the dearth of talent they had on this card.
Yeah, it was not good in the sense of the roster just being so thin. Listening to your backstory there, I find myself asking the question with DX, beating up Slaughter, considering pretty much weekly. Do you think that DX was trying to, for this short little period of time, kind of encapsulate what the NWO was doing?
Oh, definitely.
In terms of consistently just getting the upper hand, making the authority figures look bad, trying to really, jack the crowd up to make them look good and just not doing it, You know what I'm saying?
I thought it worked on its own level. They were being more childish than the NWO, but I thought some of the tropes that the NWO used were busted out by DX, like the spray painting and the anti-authority. But I thought they were unique enough. I thought they were just acting more like punks, and the NWO was more like bullies and thugs. DX was just more like kind of jackass punks, like frat boys, doing wet willies and wedgies and, mooning and, shit like that, and cutting insider things. And, it was just more of a, I don't know. It was the same but different.
No, I understand your point. I mean, they weren't as serious, and of course, December would be, speaking of NWO, a linchpin month in the history of WCW, and we'll talk more about that in a little towards the end of the show. DX actually approached it a little differently. They were a little more comical, a little more farcical. NWO obviously more serious. I mean, they were funny in their own right, but They weren't ha ha chuckle right. goofy parlor trick funny like
exactly.
like DX was. So,
but just going back to my point about the lack of talent, the fact that they had to drag Slaughter into a match here, a match that goes 18 minutes in a street fight
crazy.
In a boot camp match, it kind of makes sense because Slaughter has been such a focal point of the angle. But still, the fact that they had to draw him out here and use him in this match really just showed the lack of depth that they had. And this whole card is just an example of that lack of depth. And actually, I think our next pay-per-view continues that trend as well, as we'll see. It wasn't until we get to the spring where they really started to kind of restock the shelves. But this match is weird. It's long and it's solid, but it's not great. For an 18-minute brawl, you kind of expected more, but then you factor in that it's Slaughter, and the heat was pretty good. And again, I thought the commentary was good, and Sarge really gives it his all, but he just wasn't in shape anymore. I mean, he was really, really bloated and overweight here. So he does what he can. He busts out the old Slaughter, work rate, but it's okay. But it's a good win for a guy that needed to be reestablished, a guy that needs to start piling up some big-time wins.
Yeah, but did it really need to be 18 minutes?
No.
No,
but they needed to fill time. I mean, there's needed to fill time.
Yeah, honestly, where were you going to put? I mean, these other matches are. Do you really? You really don't want to make many of these other matches much longer?
You think they should use Anvil here
in a street fight? Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem.
Maybe
with that
one last hurrah for him instead of wiping him on a Raw. May you finish him off here?
Yeah, I agree with that. Maybe Slaughter saying, Anvil. It'll be Anvil. Like maybe you book it like that, but then maybe you do a swerve and say, Triple H, you're not facing me at D-Generation X. You'll be facing this guy, and then play some kind of music, and then Anvil comes out and beats the shit out of him, power slams him.
Yeah,
whatever.
Could have been something like
that. I've been fine with that.
Maybe they don't want to give him the payday. I don't know. I mean, Slaughter's fine. I'm not trying to look for a way out of it. It's just an odd choice, that's all. So, but Helmsley wins at the pedigree, and China was all over this match, just constantly interfering, constantly getting on Sarge. Anytime he got some offense going, she would get involved. And, hit him with a low blow and everything else. And Slaughter, at one point, thwarted her by throwing a powder in her face and kind of slowed her up. But, like I said, she'd hit the low blow at the end, and then Helmsley would follow with the pedigree to get the win. So, a good win for him. He needed one. Like I said, he really started to needed to start piling up some wins here. He kind of has been living off Michael's coattails the last couple of months. He hasn't even been on pay-per-view since, if you don't count One Night Only, was SummerSlam his last pay-per-view match?
Helmsley?
I don't think he's at ground.
Yeah.
I don't think he's at ground zero. He's definitely not at Bad Blood.
No, he's not at ground zero.
And he's definitely not at Survivor Series.
He's definitely on Survivor Series. He's not at Bad Blood. Yeah, this is his first match on American pay-per-view since losing to Mankind.
So
in the cage. So he definitely needed to be boosted.
Yeah, he needed to start getting some wins and not just, living as Michael's lackey. So this was one he needed to kind of kickstart things, but
So there you go. Triple H in his first win. Under his new, much easier to say moniker, and he gets a win over a incredibly bloated Sergeant Slaughter. All right, we got three matches left. Why don't we take a break? Kind of decompress a bit and kind of try and comprehend what kind of junk we've already gone over.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, other than the opener with the light heavyweights, these last four matches have just been not great, just not good. The last match isn't bad; it's entertaining, but you probably could have done something a little bit better with it, but otherwise the first five matches, other than the light heavyweight matches, have been, as you've said, as we've documented so far, a perfect example of the dearth of the depth chart of talent in the company right now is fairly thin, and it's pretty much proven at this show. So I would have easily gotten Neidhart. Before we move on, I really think about that now. Like, did Slaughter really have to be in this match? Really? I mean, he was nowhere near fighting shape. It just really hits me now all of a sudden. It's like, you really could have put Neidhart in there. Why give him the payday? Gee, why punish the... I mean, whatever you happened a month ago, but give the guy... He didn't have to win. He wasn't going to win anyway. At least, make... I think Helmsley would have even got even a bigger push if, like, a guy, an actual guy who was in wrestling shape. I mean, as much shape as Neidhart could ever be in.
Honestly, though, I don't know if Neidhart could have delivered the match as Slaughter did. I don't know what that says about Anvil's talent, but I don't know if he could bump. I don't think he's as good as a bumper as Slaughter is. And now that I think about it, I think May Sarge is a better fit, actually.
Okay. All right. When we come back from break, we've got three more matches, including a pair of championship matches. But first off, we've got a myriad of things to go over. So we will do that first. Because?
Because!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Yes, WrestleChat.net, indeed, your home for everything pro wrestling. All the news and notes you need from WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. They have a great message board. Check out their podcast, The Champ, Jeff Beck, and his announcer. And of course, while you're perusing the site, you look to the right, you see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go to our full archive, courtesy of our good friends at Podbean. That is WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Also, don't forget the history of WWE.com, our friend Grant Cawthon. Outstanding research site, ring results, DVD reviews, everything you need is there. Also, check out our show on Stitcher.com, whether you have iPhone, Android, any kind of phone or any kind of player, tablet. Go to it, you can listen to our shows anytime. And then, of course, also on iTunes. And, of course, check out our message board, Bigelow34.proboards.com. We're always talking wrestling, sports, anything you want. Check out JR's and my reviews. We talk Raw, SmackDown, all sorts of stuff. And don't forget to help out our friend Jay Womet. Still dealing with a lot of physical issues with his leg and a touch of skin cancer, but he's a fighter, and he's a great fan of the show. And if you want to help him, check the link on our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, and you can help him out. Great guy.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, this is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be Podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
All right, Nation, we are back, continuing through the Vintage Vault review of In Your House D-Generation X, wrapping up the year that is 1997. We want to give one more plug in here. We do need to get that break updated, Scott, so we're going to have to get to work on that. But we have a new sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum at TWFnews.com. The Wrestling Forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF are looking to create a wrestling media nation by affiliating with as many top-quality blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts as they possibly can, and that includes yours. They're the official forum of WrestleChat.net, and the Place to Be have already joined up to have their podcast, our podcast featured on there. So go check them out to find out what they're all about, TWFnews.com. That's TWFnews.com. And as I said, the WrestleChat podcast is on there, and I think Jay Hunter may have be getting his old school one on there too, hopefully. If not, we'll push him towards that. So also want to quickly give a plug to our contest that's coming up, of course, with Jay Womet. Whoever donates the most to Jay Womet's fund between November 1st and November 30th, Jay's going to keep track. That person wins 3 prizes. First prize they win is they get to appear on any Vintage Vault of their choosing with us. They also get to choose any show for us to review as part of our throwback series, anything you'd like. And thirdly, you earn 10 bonus discs from Jay Womet added to your order. So a great prize package there. And that goes, we'll determine that on December 1st. The person who spends the most money on Jay's donation from November 1st through November 30th.
Yes. Great guy, Jay. Great guy. And for those that are in the Poughkeepsie, northern New York area, I want to plug this because Mr. Womet and I were talking about it this weekend. That great site, the great wrestling promotion, I think it's 2CW.
Yes. Yep.
That he loves to pimp on our program and on the message boards, mm-hmm. and of course on our Facebook page. You got 2 shows coming up in November. November 16th, which is a Friday, in Watertown, New York, and then again on November 17th. In Binghamton. He's invited me if I'd like to come. I'm kicking around the idea. It is a long drive from where I am. But I believe, JR, and I know you haven't talked to your boy in a while, but I believe our man John Walters actually is going.
Well, he was he was on the show this past weekend.
All right.
So I think he's done. I think he's going back to Florida now for the winter. So.
Okay.
He's like a cross between a bird and an old man.
Yes. Because Jay Womet mentioned he may be still going. So we'll kick that idea around. But anyway, for those that live closer to J.O. than I do, If you want to check those shows out, apparently they're really awesome. Mm-hmm. 2CW. Again, November 16th in Watertown, New York, and November 17th in Binghamton. Binghamton's like three and a half hours. It's a hike. So,
and speaking of John, he actually appeared on Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling podcast. So if you don't listen to that, check it out. He was on, I think he was two episodes ago he was on. I let him have it, though, because he was supposed to give us a plug on that show, and he forgot because he's a jackass. But definitely check that out. Good interview and a good publicity for a buddy, also known as RJ Brewer. So, all right, Scott, let's get back into In Your House
Let's get back into it. Yes, all right. Our next match pits a guy who took the last pay-per-view off against a big return, JR.
Yeah, a lot of chaos here. Okay, so in September... Yeah. The artist known as Jeff Jarrett defected from WCW, pretty much the first defection in a while to go from WCW to the WWF. On Raw in October, Vince McMahon opened the show and on commentary announced that a former WWF champion would actually be appearing later in the show on Raw. So and later came out strutted Jeff Jarrett. He actually proceeded to cut up WCW pretty good and even let Vince have it in his own unique way that he's able to do. Just kind of ripping on the way he was used in the past and really the first kind of shoot style interview we'd get on Raw coming from an unlikely source here, a very angry Jeff Jarrett. So over the next few weeks, we got interviews with Jim Ross sitting down with Jarrett and he ripped on everything, shot on WCW, how much he hated the old Double J character and the gold fake gold tooth and the records and all that stuff. And following Survivor Series, he was finally scheduled to actually appear in the ring. But every time he set for a match, something would go haywire. Either he'd bitch about the conditions. He said he wanted M&Ms in his locker room. He didn't get them. Or his opponent would get beat up by Kane. Something always happened. So he was not able to appear in any matches. So finally, the week before the show, he appeared. He would lay down an open challenge for any opponent at the pay-per-view. And the lights dimmed. The Undertaker made his first appearance since being laid out by Kane at Bad Blood. And he accepted the challenge of Jeff Jarrett. So the match was set up here. Kind of a weird match, Jeff Jarrett and the Undertaker. But so Jarrett's back in the promotion. First guy really to defect away from WCW during a time when they looked, looking after Montreal, I'm sure a lot of people at the time, myself included, was wondering if Jarrett made a major mistake, kind of jumping off the, the ship that was rising and heading over to, as Rick Rude put it, the Titanic. What did you think of Jarrett's return here?
I was never a huge Jeff Jarrett fan. I did like what was going on with him in WCW. I don't think his year was that bad. I mean, for those that were watching at the time, he was kind of flirting with the Horsemen. He was in it. He was out of it. He was in it. He was out of it. He did win the United States heavyweight title. He defeated Dean Malenko in June. Would hold it till, mid-August when he lost to Our Man Mongo.
Oh, baby. Yeah, baby
and,
doll.
Yeah, baby doll. And he became... the new U.S. heavyweight champion. But I don't know. I thought he was fine. I don't know. His character, he's a Southern guy. He's from Tennessee. It's weird. He just fit WCW better. So, I mean, I'm not going to say I was
unhappy. Actually, he did, but he didn't, because his character in WCW at the time felt kind of out of place with the NWO stuff. He was just kind of hanging around in his same old gimmick with the white, spindle tights and his long blonde hair and kind of doing the guitar thing. And yeah. I don't know. He kind of fit, but he kind of didn't. He fit more in WCW like in the early 90s, not really at this point. I thought it was weird to see him come back as like the shoot interview character. This was, to me, was weird because he never seemed like the type to speak his mind like this angrily. And, he really rips on everything. And as the first guy we saw do this, and the first time, Scott, also, that they really started mentioning WCW. It was also around this time that Jim Cornette started doing his infamous shoot promos on Raw each week. I don't know if you remember those, but he came out and lit into everything. Hogan and Piper and Bischoff. And it was crazy to see them do this all of a sudden out of nowhere. They had never mentioned the competition at all. And now all of a sudden they are, all of a sudden they're referencing WCW every week and different guys shooting on them. And even Jarrett shooting on Vince. And just a lot of weird stuff. And it was cool. It definitely felt very... different and exciting to see this happening instead of the same old antiseptic stuff. So it was fun. You just wouldn't think Jarrett would be the guy to do it.
Well, right now, at this point in the timeline, JR, they couldn't afford antiseptic stuff.
No,
I mean, they were sitting in a boat that had a big hole in the middle of it, and it wasn't sunk,
right.
But it was certainly sinking, taking on a lot of water. So buckets were being thrown over the side. So antiseptic was not going to work here. So I have to say, I'm actually a little impressed that they took a guy like Jarrett, unconventional for a role like this, and kind of put him in there. And as for the Cornette promos, I most certainly remember them. and they were exceptional. I remember the one, I don't know if this was by 98. Remember they made fun of X-Pac and Piper. It was like some funny, weird reference that, like some strange analogy Cornette would make. It was really hilarious. And you know, right now it was Vince really was sitting there like a wounded animal in the woods. I mean, he was, you know, the defensive ones are the worst. And, you know, Vince is usually at his best when someone's got him backed into a corner, and you couldn't be more backed into a corner than you were right now. So right now, I mean, all sorts of things are happening, and I applaud it. I think Jeff Jarrett was actually a decent choice for it. It was something very different, very refreshing. Him and Taker? I don't know.
Right.
The match is not great.
Yeah, it was really just a backdrop anyway.
Well, it was another reason to get Taker on the show.
Yep.
As expected, you know, as anticipated, the roster being as thin as it is, you obviously weren't going to have him with Kane.
Right.
That still needed to kind of percolate a little bit. I mean, what else were you going to do with Taker? You can't leave him off the show.
Not
you
again.
Don't have many, no. You don't have any weapons in your, yeah, you don't have any weapons in your gun right now. You got to fire off the big bombs that you got. So, Taker was probably the only one, really, between, other than Sean, he's really the only main eventer right now. Really, if you think about it, the only one.
Well, I think we got a guy.
I mean, Stone Cold isn't.
No?
Well, we'll get more into him in a minute. I don't think he's. I mean,
I
this
think
match.
He was. I think he was. I think he was more than over enough to be considered a main event level guy at this point.
I think we think that.
No, I think they thought that too. I mean, come on, he main evented pay-per-view Star 97.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. But obviously, not everybody's heads were, you know, outside of their asses. There was a lot of bad decisions going on at the time. In any event, this match is just not. It's unique. It's weird. If you can find it on YouTube, it's not on any compilations. If you, it is, but he's not here.
It is on YouTube because I watched it today.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's not on any compilations. Big shock. Why would it be? Watch it. Just for the sheer uniqueness of the combination of guys. Just very weird. Something you would never see again.
Well, I mean, like I said, it really is just a backdrop to have, you know, push the Undertaker Kane thing and to get Jarrett just kind of refamiliarized with the product. But Kane does come out here. And he attacks the Undertaker, hits him with a choke slam. Taker again refuses to touch him. And that draws the DQ, and Kane leaves. And, of course, Jarrett celebrates like he won the Super Bowl. Again, that would kind of be a shtick over these weeks when he wasn't really winning matches, but he was. So Taker again takes a choke slam from Kane, or takes you know, a blow from Kane, and Jeff Jarrett wins a match by DQ. So you know that Taker and Kane are continuing to build and that things are going to happen. Between these weeks, between Survivor Series and this show, Kane continued to just assault people. On TV. Most famous one maybe was when he beat up Flash Funk, and then Shawn Michaels came in and pinned him because he was supposed to fight Flash Funk, and they celebrated like crazy. So a lot of people pick up the scraps from Kane.
Yeah, and you know, the Undertaker right now, I mean, it was good to see him there because that means he wasn't leaving, but you know, it's never been really vocalized as to what Taker's opinion was of what has happened. Taker being a big proponent of respect and cohesiveness and loyalty in a locker room, I'm sure Vince was not one of his favorite people at this moment in time. I'm sure Sean most certainly was not one of his favorite people. The relationship between the two of them, not great, not great at all, and it would get worse over the next few months and actually over the next couple of years, and then it would change, and we'll get to that. But yeah, it was... Taker, right now, the barometer of how good the company is.
I believe it's
was
pronounced
at the time,
thermometer.
No, it's barometer. Thermometer. Barometer of how the company was doing probably would be Undertaker. So you're thinking to yourself, and I'm sure you thought this, JR, watching it with Andy Flash Flanagan.
Yes.
Well, if Taker's here, then that means everything's okay. Because if he wasn't there, if he wasn't at this pay-per-view, I'd have been shitting bricks.
Yeah.
As a WWF fan. Because if he didn't show up, if he walked out, or if he's protesting.
And it felt like it was a possibility, trust me, at the time. It definitely did.
Mm. But he did stay. You know, this match is not an indicative of anything. It's not, you know, it's not great. But at least Taker being there kind of what's the word I'm thinking of? Not kind of settled things.
You're having
down.
A rough night.
I'm trying to think of. I'm trying
stabilized.
To think of the
process. Stabilized. These are like simple words too.
I know. I stabilized things within the promotion. So right now, I think seeing him on camera, even though there's no matter how good or bad the match is good for the company because at least you know he's sticking around. He realizes whether or not he agrees with what happened with Brett and Vince or whatever. At least he knows that staying here is better for his career and maybe for the company.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel good about that. This match, you don't feel good about. This match is terrible.
Yeah, match is nothing. Again, but, just a backdrop to continue the feud. That's all.
Yeah. So there you go. Undertaker loses, but loses by DQ.
Yep.
Jarrett wins to get his character back. And, of course, Taker's got a lot. He's had a very up and down 1997, mostly ups, you mm-hmm. know. World Wrestling Federation
yeah,
champion.
Yeah, he was champion for most of the year. So
most of the year. I mean, a lot of people think he was ignored due to other things, but, you know, that's all, you know, interpretation is based on what you're thinking. So there he is. He ends his year kind of with a whimper, but that's okay. 98 starts off pretty hot for him. So, okay. Next up is our next title match, and it is for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship. And as short as the match is, JR, it is easily the highlight of – well, I won't say easily the highlight of the show, but
it's
maybe for the complete package,
yeah.
It's the highlight of the show. Because now, for the first time on the night, you're seeing the glimmer of hope.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know? So at the urging of the Nation leader, Farouk, who's still pissed that Steve Austin had cost him the IC title of Bad Blood, Rocky Maivia, now known as The Rock, as he called himself – stole Austin's newly won Intercontinental title and began proclaiming himself as the champ. Austin and Rock went back and forth during the ensuing weeks, launching various sneak attacks on each other, all building up to this match. And, of course, with the infamous, you look down at your beeper and it says 316 on it. You know your ass is mine. And, of course, the beeper goes off and Rocky looks at it and Austin jumps him. That's the most infamous one. And just other various things. So Rock had stolen the title. Austin wants it back. Very interesting entrance here for Austin. He drives out in his pickup truck down to the ring. So kind of a sign of things to come throughout 1998. But the crowd just goes batshit. And I'll tell you this, Scott. I was impressed listening today or watching today just how much heat Rock had already developed. He was, man, he was just super over as a heel already. And it had just been a couple of months since he returned as a heel. And, you know, it was recently in Survivor Series. He was, you know, getting reactions, but not like this. He was just drawing some fantastic heat here. The crowd is all over him, and they pop big time for Austin. So as far as crowd reaction goes, this definitely was their match of the night.
Absolutely, and everything is set up perfectly. Austin comes out in the black truck, you know, blasting Highway to, or not Highway to Hell, Back in Black.
Yeah.
And just thank God for the two of them.
Yeah.
But just as surprising of Austin, who you already know is red hot, and now really – begins the mega push here. I mean, the push,
mm-hmm.
just the plain push, started quite a while ago. The mega push yeah. begins here.
Well, this was like the final step, and then it kicks off the next night.
Yes. As for The Rock,
mm-hmm.
It's so great now to finally get to the show and just be able to call everybody what they're supposed to be called. What a job he's doing, huh? Just needed some time, needed a change of pace. As I mentioned in previous shows, he's got the University of Miami swagger, and now he's using it.
Yes.
And just a really fun match. 5.5 minutes is a crime, in my opinion. I would have given these guys...
They couldn't, though.
Could have taken maybe 6 minutes.
No, they couldn't because of, I think, Austin's condition.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
I still don't think he was really ready to go longer than this. I think, you know, we saw it at Survivor Series. That was 5 minutes, and we see it here. I just don't think he was really prepared yet to go more than this, and that's why this is really pretty much just a brawl with the rest of the nation gets involved and everything else. It's not really a match. I think that's a big part of it. I just don't think he was still ready physically to go, and I think he wouldn't be for the next I don't think he would be until mid to late January, honestly.
Well, the best part of this whole match, not even is the match, it's the build. They're unbelievably top-notch promo skills. Austin's promo skills already without equal, and The Rock now in this new role, or, you know, role that has been developed over the past couple of months, really is you know, if he's finally getting his comfort level down with cutting great promos, really boosted this matchup.
Yep.
And obviously, like you said, Austin would definitely take the next, the final step beginning the next night. But this was just a fun, crazy match.
Yeah.
With, you know,
of course, he throws
balls on the outside,
throws D'Lo Brown onto the truck, and he kicks into the, breaks the windshield, and Austin pins Rock with the Stone Cold Stunner to, you know, he was still champion, retained his title, but get his belt back as well. But this feud is obviously far from over. And we'll talk about next week how things really get crazy starting the next night. So interesting match, fun brawl. And as you said, it really starts to launch Austin to the stratosphere as a mega star.
But The Rock gets his rewards as well because he's obviously earned a slot himself.
Yep.
After this match. So this is the match. This is the one match that's actually on compilations. I believe it is on the history of the Intercontinental title. I'm not sure. I believe it's that new set that came out, the one that kind of goes along with the World Heavyweight title and the WWE title. It is also on the new four-disc. I'm pretty sure it's the four-disc Steve Austin DVD that came out. I don't think it's the older one. I'm pretty sure it's the newer one. And this is the only match that's on anything, any compilations from this show. So there you go. Steve Austin retains the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship and, as you said, the physical belt back as well. All right, we have finally reached our main event. Can it save this show? We shall see. Your World Wrestling Federation champion,
BTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
Oh, Criscolo, you fucking Krispy Kreme cunt piece of shit. Where's your Princess of Poughkeepsie stupid-ass friend, Jason Greenhouse? I had all kinds of colonoscopy jokes lined up for him. I'm guessing you performed it, though, so I'll talk to you about it. Did you find anything up there of note?
Nothing.
Did you find LaRue's head? Because it's been buried up there for weeks. Ha! All right, Jim Duggan didn't even wrestle in December at WCW. I don't know what he was doing, that friggin' asshole. I do hear he's going to be around these parts, though, Criscolo. I heard he's going to be at Providence in a couple weeks. Are you aware of this, you son of a bitch?
I was not aware of that, Mr. McMahon, sir.
All right, well, he's going to be there. We're going to go meet him, see what he's got to say about his time in WCW in December of 97.
I don't think there was much, sir.
Go fuck yourself. McMahon's out of here. Suck it, bitch. It doesn't like Greenhouse, apparently.
But if there's no matches, why does he even show up? What an egomaniac.
Oh, is he going to give an update?
An update on nothing.
He was right, though. Duggan is going to be here at the Rhode Island Comic Con November 3rd and 4th.
Really?
Yeah.
Very impressive. You know, something that has been brought up by the Lumpy Silverback there, Matt Rodellis, that he apparently read that, and we'll expound on this on Wednesday with our headline show. Apparently, WWE is finally getting trying to acquire the Mid-South.
It has been acquired.
Video library, yeah.
If you visited now, the Facebook live chats page, you know that it's been solidified.
Because I don't get Facebook at work, I haven't had a chance to look. But yes, so for all of you that think he was great in Mid-South. We'll get into that on Wednesday. Anyway, there you go. Thanks, Mr. McMahon. Fucking jerk. All right, let's go to the main event. Your World Wrestling Federation champion, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, taking on kind of a shocking, well, I wouldn't say totally shocking.
Yeah, yes and no.
Challenger in the World's Most Dangerous Man, Ken Shamrock, getting the world title shot here.
Again, lack of depth. I mean, they had to use someone here. And Shamrock is a guy I think they felt like he had credibility as far as a draw goes, maybe not as a wrestler, but, you know, due to his fighting background and his name, I think they figured, this pay-per-view is probably going to tank anyway. Maybe we'll get something out of him, fight fans or something. And I thought the build was solid enough. They kind of tried to school Shamrock a little bit. Of course, this had that segment where Shawn Michaels is in the wheelchair sitting on the ramp and, Helmsley was, they were practicing the ankle lock on Michaels, and it was Helmsley cranking, and, Michaels had like a fake prosthetic leg in, and Helmsley was cranking the leg around in a circle and all that. So, and then, of course, heading into the show, we had the aforementioned segment with Slaughter and China and Anvil and all that mess. So,
yes. The match itself is actually not that bad. I actually graded it higher than you did.
Yeah, not a long match. 18 and a half minutes.
Yeah, and again, on the one hand, you're thinking, God, Shamrock. But on the other hand, you know, at times in 97, he did kind of get some moments where you figure, well, this guy's probably due for something special.
Oh, definitely.
So he definitely, I think, earned the credibility mm-hmm. to get at least one crack.
Yeah. And the crux, crux of the story in the build that they really harped on, and Jim Cornette even talks about it when he interviews him before the match, he talks about, you know, is Shamrock, you know, ready for a big match? And Shamrock says, yeah, you know, it may not be in wrestling, but in Ultimate Fighting, I have a ton of experience of big pay-per-view title matches, you know, on this stage. And they talk about, you know, how Shamrock's never been in a match this big on pay-per-view before and never had a title match on pay-per-view before. And he's like, yeah, I have. It's just, you know, in Ultimate Fighting. So that was a cool touch, you know, to kind of play up his experience in that field and saying, you know, Shamrock being confident he could carry that over here against a legit main eventer like Shawn Michaels. So Michaels had been, you know, dominant champion over the last month, mainly thanks to DX. And that continues here. This was like straight out of the old school 1988 Ric Flair Four Horsemen playbook. You know, Helmsley and China just interfere every fucking 3 seconds in this match. Anytime Shamrock gets any momentum, they get involved. One of them, you know, distracts the ref, and the other one clocks Shamrock, and the match continues. A little slow in the middle, some rest holds mixed in, and like I said, just tons and tons of interference. And finally, Shamrock fights them off and is about to get the win, about to hook the ankle lock, but Helmsley and China both come in and finally draw the DQ at 18:28. I get it. They wanted to keep Shamrock strong. I think they could have done a finish where maybe Helmsley hits him with a chair and they pin him, but whatever. I guess at this point it doesn't really matter. The highlight of the match to me was that Michaels moonsault off the top rope to the floor. It was a moonsault, right? Or dive, like a turning dive, like a cross body.
Yes, I will confirm that on history of WWE, okay. But... yeah, I mean, I thought it was entertaining enough where Shamrock was the kind of guy that could challenge Shawn with a different type of moveset, different type of style. So if they actually, you know, involve themselves and actually Shawn kind of let Shamrock get into the crux of the match, which I think he did, then I think it was. I think that's what makes this match very good. I think that's what makes this match better than, you know, better than people remember it, because they're thinking, oh, well, Shawn, he probably half cared. And not necessarily true. Shawn still, you know, when it came to being in the ring, you know, took his matches seriously. Whether or not he had a clear head or not is, you know, is neither here nor there in that aspect.
I don't know if you remember this, Scott, but in the build, they had that kind of a brawl on Raw, and Michaels was loudly calling the spots for Shamrock. And at one point, Shamrock goes to close on him over the top, and Michaels starts flipping backwards over the rope before Shamrock even goes near him. And I remember people thinking Michaels was trying to sandbag Shamrock and make him look stupid. And I didn't really notice it in this match, but I see many people complain that Michaels is audibly calling spots in this match as well, trying to fuck with Shamrock and make him look dumb. Now, I don't know if that's true or if it's people looking into things too much, but I do specifically remember the Raw incident where Michaels was calling the spot out loud and flipped back over the rope before Shamrock touched him. So it definitely looked like he was kind of being a dick to Shamrock here. And Shamrock, of course, was Bret Hart's boy. Don't forget, Hart trained him, and Shamrock was a close friend of his. So, you know, a lot of people just assume Shawn was continuing to fuck with Bret by having him mess with Shamrock here.
Yeah. Which is a shame, because had Shawn taken a little more seriously, this probably could have been a very, very good match. And I still grade it 3.5 out of 5. You graded about a half point less than me. I still think that it was a very good match and could have been even better had Shawn not been such a dick. I mean,
yeah.
Why do you got to be? You got what you wanted, regardless of whether you were in on it or whatever the whole fucking scheme is irrelevant. He got what he wanted. So why don't just go with it? You know, we'll obviously talk more about Shawn's the rest of his run in our next review. We'll hold off on it, but obviously Shawn's just on the top rung of the D-bag ladder.
Right.
I mean, he's just being such a scumbag right now. It's not even... And right now, Shawn, we can't afford for any BS in matches. I mean, we're hanging by a thread here. We have no time for any of your nonsense. We could have...
Are you okay with the finish, though? Match.
Yeah, I mean, the finish... He wasn't going to win the match anyway.
Right.
So...
yeah, it's a rare time I'm okay with the DQ.
Yeah, it's fine here.
It's kind of a lost show anyway. I mean, honestly, it's more like a glorified Raw at this point. So to me, it's, you know, it sucks for the people who paid for it, but the people who paid for it are the diehards anyway. So I'm kind of okay with it. And yeah, so Shamrock loses by DQ, but after the match, you know, kind of brawl going on and chaos is ensuing. A man in a sweatsuit comes out and starts knocks Sean off the apron into the announce table and starts pounding on him on the floor. And that man is Owen Hart, who had been out of action, missing since Survivor Series, shows up here. The only Hart family member remaining in the WWF, and goes after the man who ran his brother and brother-in-law's out of the promotion. So Owen Hart back looking for vengeance, and it seems like Shawn Michaels' next feud is now in place.
And for those who may not know, Owen did not stay voluntarily.
Right.
He was locked into his contract, so he was kind of stuck.
Yeah, he wanted out, and Brett was trying to get him out. He did his best, and Vince would not let Owen out of the contract. I think part of it was he wanted to stick it to Brett, but I think the other part was that he knew Owen was a good hand in the ring, and I think they knew they could get to him and get him to calm down eventually. And I think they were losing so much depth that if they lost him, that's another big blow to the upper mid-card. You know, a name guy, a guy that everyone knew, and a guy that could really wrestle in the ring. So,
right.
Owen really just—he was just trying to make money at this point, so he could retire in a few years anyway. So, that was kind of where he was. You know, I think Brett even eventually told him, "Look, you need to stay because if you breach a contract, you're not going to get paid, and you're not going to get to come to WCW anyway. So, just stay there and cash in and make the cash." So, that was kind of where the Hart family was at this point. So, Anvil's gone. Davey Boy Smith had major knee surgery, and he would be gone. And him and Anvil would both show up in WCW's 98 Dawn, along with Bret Hart. So Rude, Crush, Bret, Neidhart, Bulldog, all gone. So like we said, the depth really taking a major hit.
You know, another guy that was not on this show, probably in protest, was Mick Foley.
Yes, Mick Foley also had a major issue. Vader also not on the show. So, you know, we're talking about this lack of depth, but there were some names on here that you could have had that didn't show up. Yeah, Foley's a good one. I didn't even think of him. So I think he was back in the graces at this point because I think he was back on by like the second or third Raw after Survivor Series. So,
right.
But yeah, I'm surprised him and Vader weren't at the show.
Yeah, very strange. So
you could have done one of them. You could have done one of them against Helmsley instead of Slaughter too.
I agree. Maybe Vader. I think Vader would have been.
I don't know if you want to do Foley again.
Yeah, I've been like the sixth time.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. There is In Your House, D-Generation X. Just not great. This is a very watershed month in the history of the World Wrestling Federation and in professional wrestling in general. We might as well get into it now since our next vault will be after the turn of the year. But
yep.
This was the two-week moment for Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
And for WCW. Of course, back then, and it would change finally the next month, but the WWF had their pay-per-views at the beginning of the month, starting back in May. June.
Yep.
With King of the Ring. What is it? 2 months later. 2 months later. 2 weeks later. I think it's two Sundays later. It's the 7th. Yeah, it's the 25th.
No, Starrcade was usually on a Wednesday at this time, I think.
Okay, so was it the 20th? All right, so if Sunday was the 21st, would it have been like the 20th?
I'm going to save you that brain fart and headache. It was December 28th.
All right, so it was, okay.
So is that Sunday or Wednesday?
No, it's a Sunday. That's 3 weeks.
Okay, so maybe next year they went to Wednesday.
It was a Sunday after Christmas.
Yep.
December 28th, 1997, inside, I think they were, at the time, they were finally doing Starrcade in D.C. every month, right? I believe so.
Let's see. This was at, yes, D.C., yep.
Might be wrong.
No, you're
D.C.
Right. Yep.
They finally got the match they wanted, all the build throughout the whole year. Finally, Sting was going to get his shot and Hollywood Hogan and the WCW Heavyweight Championship. This was the match they've been booking all year. This was the match they were teasing all year. Hogan would be on every other month on pay-per-view. We talked about this a lot when we did some of our Raw recaps. This was it, JR. If Eric Bischoff was going to quote-unquote step on Vince's throat, this was the moment.
Yep.
He was not going to get this shot again.
No.
He had to do it now. This had to be a Buco top of the line, unbelievable main event with Sting getting a big, clean win, vaulting the promotion, and burying the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, with Bret Hart coming in, and by the way, I don't know where I got this. Okay, Starrcade 95 was on a Wednesday. Apparently, that's the only one. So I thought every year was on a Wednesday.
No, it was definitely always on a Sunday. Oh, well, I mean, obviously, some of the years it was Thursday with Thanksgiving, but I don't remember it ever Yeah, I don't remember it being on a Wednesday. So
yeah, 95 right. was definitely on a Wednesday.
Okay.
okay. So anyway, I digress. But the yes, they needed to. You're absolutely right. They needed to really cash in. They really needed to, you know, make. They needed to bury the WWF while they had the opportunity. They had a golden shot here to really drive the nail through, and like you said, deliver a match that paid off. This incredible build with Sting. They had Bret Hart coming in, arguably the hottest name in wrestling. And it really seemed like it was going to be hard for them to fuck things up. And it really seemed like they were finally going to bury Vince once and for all. And, you know, DX is an interesting pay-per-view. Like we said, it's really not the best in-ring product. The match, best match is probably, you know, arguably a three. So if you're looking for a snapshot, though, of the uniqueness of the time period, I think this is it. I think this is your show. It's a weird switch. You know, 97 had a lot of the attitude qualities, a lot of anger, angst, a lot of brawling, a lot of, you know, high-level storylines. But this is where the character start to develop, the, you know, the whole DX attitude, the whole themes, you know, their music, the strippers, you know, during the opening and all the you know, anger and the shooting and the everything else, you know, just guys like Mero and the artist formerly known as Goldust and just all these guys that were, you know, edgier and the New Age Outlaws. And you just had guys that were really young, hungry, and seeing their opening, I think, you know, all this talent, we keep talking about this lack of talent, you know, Vince had to push somebody. He had to use somebody. So all these guys were pissed off, missing, gone, and guys like the Outlaws, guys like Mark Mero, guys like Goldust, you know, Shamrock, Jarrett, they all had an opening now. Hunter Helmsley, you know, they all had a chance to really step up and fill these voids, and they really start to do that here. You know, this is a show that sees a lot of guys start to climb that ladder and take advantage of those openings.
Yep, and what WCW doesn't do is not is
they don't seal the deal.
A chance to do that. Yeah. Yeah. For those who, just a quick recap, the match itself, I thought the build was good. You know, Hogan was just red hot as a heel. Sting was just on fire right now for doing almost nothing. They did a, WCW did a great job of holding him back. But then we get the weird so alleged fast count, which wasn't really that fast.
Right.
It wasn't fast enough to make a big difference.
No.
Hogan allegedly wins. Then out comes Bret Hart. Then we get this big yapping and don't know what's going on. They continue wrestling. Sting, I think, hits the Stinger Splash, puts on the Scorpion Deathlock, and whether Hogan tapped or not remains to be seen, but Bret just rings the bell or gets him to ring the bell already, and that's it. Sting wins the WCW title.
Yeah, they totally botched. They botched
Bret. The whole thing up. Yeah. It needed to be completely clean, and whether it's Bischoff's fault, whether it's Hogan's fault, who gives a shit? Somebody's left holding the bag as blowing the opportunity to now there's plenty of fault to be, you know, probably plenty of blame to be had. Check out the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD, and they definitely go into it, and you know, leave it to your own determination of what you think, PTB Nation. But what's not, what is indisputable is that they had their moment and they missed.
Yeah. And then even you know, Brett as well, just they just missed the boat on him completely. They have this guy that's coming in; it could have been a completely sympathetic character, and they just fuck it up because that's what WCW did at that point. So,
well, at that point, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of crap going on with backstage stuff, with contracts and money, and guys, you know, lazy bastards not wanting to wrestle, and then you put them in charge of the booking, and it's just a complete.
Yep.
Unmitigated disaster backstage, getting worse and worse. At the moment, it's not horrendous, but we clearly see throughout 98, it gets a little bit worse and a little bit worse. And then another guy, we might as well mention him now, we really haven't mentioned him yet, a guy that's just starting to build some momentum is a guy whose career had just started a few months earlier, and that was Goldberg.
Yes.
Building his credentials. I mean, he had, I don't know if he'd won the U.S. title yet.
No, no, that didn't come until April. Here, he was actually still kind of a heel. He was feuding with Mongo. Deborah was involved, and he hadn't really officially turned face yet. He had just started kind of building his streak and building his name, leading it to World War III and Starrcade. So not really a force yet at all.
No, but he was slowly building wins, and he had this aura about him. And so there were some good things about WCW, but they needed to get that right. They needed to get that right, and they didn't. Pure and simple.
Yep. So, all right. There is You're in Your House DX and your little kind of snapshot of the time period. We will get into more of 1997 next week, but let's get to some feedback, Scott, and then we'll kind of run down where we're headed.
Okay. We begin. I'll start this time. We begin with Ryan Schmuck.
Mm-hmm.
First, my feedback from Survivor Series 97. Okay. Second to last Coliseum video release was Survivor Series 97. The last video made by Coliseum video was Rampage 97, which was the In Your House Bad Blood. All the matches were okay. I wonder if the heel turn of Goldust would have led to Pillman turning face or teaming up with the heel Goldust had Pillman not passed away. Blackman finally makes his WWF debut after a long illness. He was supposed to be in the WWF back in 89 after a successful 88 trial in a six-man on the 5/7/88 Superstars. No Patriot or Glenn Kulka, I believe, for Team Canada versus Team USA was supposed to be Davey Boy Smith, Neidhart, Tiger Ali Singh, and Glenn Kulka versus Patriot, Dude Love, Vader, and Goldust. Kane was a successful in-ring debut against Mankind, although wrestling under red lights ruined most of the match. Brett HBK, you know something was up when nearly all the backstage people were out there. Brett gets screwed. Michaels pretends to be frustrated when he leaves. Undertaker wasn't at the show either. Several people would leave along with Brett, and things got interesting. Okay. Now, In Your House DX. Taka, Bryan. Okay match and a new champion. Six-man gang war. Z. Butterbean beats Mark Merrill via DQ in a tough man boxing match. I guess Merrill didn't want to get knocked out. NAO over Los Barriquas. Oh, NAO over LOD because of Hog and Pig. Triple H over Sergeant Slobber, as he would call in a good boot camp match. NWA Jeff Jarrett over Undertaker because Kane choke slamming Jarrett. Austin Rock good match. Shamrock HBK pretty good. And Owen appears. 1997 is done. Bring on 1998. The year WWF gets really good.
All right, PTB Trivia Tournament and Raw aficionado Jay Hinchy. Well, 1997 on pay-per-view comes to a close as DX gets their own In Your House from Springfield, Mass. Kind of a mixed show, but that's not bad either. Taka versus Brian Christopher, finals of the lightweight tournament. A really good match. I think the King gets involved to help his son, or Brian. Taka wins the title with the Michinoku Driver to become the first light heavyweight champion. DOA Barriquazo, the feud that never ends, would finally end here in Barriquas' win. Did DOA ever win against Savio's guys? I'm wrong. Actually, they won at Bad Blood. Mero Butterbean started with what would become something in 1998. Mero by now really become a douchebag heel and starts mistreating Sable. The match itself is okay at best, and Mero does his best to cheat his way to a win. Butterbean wins by DQ and took a beating in the process. Tag titles on the line. Road Dogg and Billy Gunn had upset the Road Warriors 2 weeks before make their first defense here. Decent match that sees the Godwins interfere to save the Outlaws titles. LOD gets another shot next month. Boot camp match. Slaughter comes out of retirement seeking payback on DX for the embarrassment he had gone through since becoming commish. Really fun brawl, I thought, and China gets involved heavily. They use just about everything that's not nailed down. Double J returned in October from WCW, getting his feet wet, taking on the Dead Man. The match is okay, more of a backdrop for Kane to interfere, getting Taker DQ'd. The first match between Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, who would carry the company throughout the Attitude Era. The IC title's at stake, a short but fun match. D'Lo getting backdropped at Austin's truck is the highlight. Austin retains with a stunner, but move on to bigger fish. Main event for the WWF title is underrated. Shamrock had the title won with the ankle lock, but Triple H and China save Shawn Michaels' backside. After the match, Owen Hart comes back and sends Shawn to the announce table, getting payback for Bret Hart. Owen and Shawn would have a great match on Raw a few weeks later. 97 is done, 98's on the horizon, with big things coming our way. Looking forward to doing Survivor Series 98 Falls with you guys. So,
one half of the tag team known as Thunder Down Under, Michael McDonald. First pay-per-view style event I ever saw. Okay, and it's even more special as the videotape was a present from my late grandfather who had heard I'd gotten into wrestling. Say what you want about Christopher not being a traditional lightweight, but he was a fantastic heel foil for Taka, and the two had some really good chemistry in what was a very good solid opener. Gang Wars dies here. I kind of thought Chains was okay, but hated the Harris twins, and in a sad confession, I thought when Albert debuted that he was Miguel Perez. Outlaws defend the tag titles against a team that came with a warning. Please do not feed the dinosaurs. They can get hostile. Also noteworthy is, I believe, Hawk in the backstage promo coined the nickname Mr. Ass. Match was almost a Memphis chicken shit heel deal with interference. Now, I'm not sure what when, but an in-ring segment did air, and all I can say is this. Quote, I did not drop some acid, man. I did not abuse diazepam. I did not take some LSD, for LSD is bad, you see. It makes you dress like Madonna, who had sex with a lime, that resembled Michael Jackson for the sake of this rhyme. I did not abuse diazepam. I did not take the acid, man. Unquote. Also, whenever I think of BDSM, I now think of Dustin Runnels.
Okay.
Okay.
Is Goldust your safe word, Mr. McDonald?
Yes. Boot camp match was surprisingly pretty good. Sarge came with his work boots and did a good job moving his feud with Helmsley along. Jeff Jarrett equals piss break. Austin was still not ready to wrestle, but they told a decent story here in what was a lame first match of one of the greatest feuds ever, if you smell it. Shamrock's fleeting moment in the main event here was really good. If you take away the controversy from other main events, this was criminally underrated. Owen makes a surprise return and just potatoes Sean in what should have been made and more into than what it was. Half-decent show from a company dealing with the short-term fallout with some major stars not involved anymore, but it's a transitional month as a whole, and the direction really picks up next month.
Corey Ferreira, so ends one of the most landmark years of wrestling. Seems like yesterday we're in Texas at the Rumble, Sean winning the belt and Mr. Austin taking out the Rumble. Taka versus Christopher, a solid match open the show. The light heavyweight division, not the best for match quality, but this is a solid match. Gang Wars, fuck these assholes, still having matches. All they will say is fuck them and their boring-ass feud. Butterbean Mero, hey, that Mark Mero's back is a new gimmick, and gets the shit knocked out of him by a fat guy. A tag title match, so those two random guys from earlier this year are now a tag team and are the champs. Fuck, who would have seen that coming? Well, this match is poor, and LOD still can't get the fucking belts. Triple H Slaughter, talk about a random feud. Mr. Helmsley talks about his dick and what he would do to Slaughter's old lady with it, and it sets up a match. The match is fucking awful. It's a far cry from Slaughter's boot camp match with Pat Patterson in 1981. Double J's back doing the same shit he was doing 2.5 years ago. Why the fuck is Taker, who had been champ for 5 months and just finished a feud with Shawn Michaels, now facing this geek? Thankfully, they did not beat Taker clean here. Austin Maivia, a lot better than Austin's last match in Survivor Series. Austin has beats the shit out of the entire nation, and it's clear he's a top face and no one can touch him. Austin retains here. And the main event, Shamrock gets a shot at the title. This is the match of the night, but does not save the piece of shit show like many Michaels matches have done over the last year and a bit. I remember one of the angles going into this match where Shamrock put Michaels in the ankle lock and Michaels have a lollipop in his mouth while overselling the move. That's right. I forgot about that, too. Another yes. spot that made Jeremy look kind of goofy. Yeah. Anyway, Owen makes his return after a month off for obvious reasons. It gets a huge-ass pop. From here, it looks like we may get Owen HBK down the line and Dave Meltzer's ratings to close out the show. And, of course, Corey says it's an awful show. Opener, 3 stars. The Gang Wars, 1/4 star. Butterbean Marrow, dud. LOD, dud. Boot camp, -2 stars from Dave. Wow.
Wow.
Dud on Taker Jarrett, 2.25 for Austin, and 3 for Shawn Michaels and Shamrock.
3 stars for the opener, huh? Pretty good. Now, it is time to clear the room, for we have the comments of one King James Manda.
King James Manda.
I hate this show. P.S. We want Brett. I'm out of here.
Okay.
Wow. Pretty quick.
So Fazio DeFazio, DX in your house, not a bad pay-per-view. Love the main event, having DX against Sgt. Slaughter showed DX's true colors. The WWF was on its way to being edgy, that WWF I would continue to enjoy for the rest of my life, and just to feel the company was changing. In 1998 was coming, PICs in the next vault, so Fazio was coming back better than ever, because 1998, the year my classmates would jump on the show on Austin bandwagon.
Okay. The other half of the, although the way he puts it, 1/3 of the Down Under triple threat. Mm-hmm. Am I missing somebody?
I believe they added Corey Ferreira to this group, I think.
Oh, okay. Dave Hall. I've always thought this was a fun event. Took me a while to see this event after the antics at Survivor Series, but I must admit that Vince was able to start to draw me back with the majority of this card. Taka and Jerry's boy put on a good match to crown Taka the light heavyweight champ. Always loved Jerry's commentary in these matches. The DOA and Barik was nearly ruined it all by putting us to sleep. Then we have Mero versus Butterbean. This was an event, not a match. The antics made this fun, and I enjoyed it even if the action was crap. The Outlaws really start to come into their element as they retain the tag titles. Sorry, Scott, but LOD just looked like they were done now. I concur. Now we move to the better half of the card. Hunter and Slaughter have a pretty decent match. Hunter's new character is really developed by now, so the match is well done. Jeff Jarrett makes his return to WWF pay-per-view, but it's a little out of his depth against Undertaker. At least Kane made an appearance, and chokeslamming Jarrett is something we all wanted to see. Austin takes on the whole nation and seems to be regaining his mojo in the ring. Our first Rock Austin match delivers a good preview of where they can go in the future. Finally, HBK and Shamrock put on a great match. Michaels now secures the #1 heel, helps make Shamrock look awesome in this match. All the antics contribute to HBK's character. We are treated to the return of Owen Hart at the end of the match. I always find it weird that HBK stepped out of the ring on the apron to taunt fans, setting up Owen's attack. It's just a shame that Owen is diverted in another direction. Would really have loved to see HBK and Owen go at it for a couple of shows before WrestleMania.
Steve Riddle. 1 month after the most controversial shows of all time, this show comes off as flat. The opener is solid as Taka is a new champion defeating Brian Christopher. Do I really need to talk about another Gang Wars? Screw it. I'm moving on. Mero Butterbean Tough Man Contest is meh, enough said. LOD Outlaws is okay as LOD gets screwed again thanks to the Godwins, and the Outlaws are now the studs of the tag division. Boot camp match is pretty good as Triple H and Slaughter put on a good brawl. Taker Jarrett was again meh as it was more about Kane and Taker with Jarrett as the third wheel. Now onto big things. The first ever meeting between Rock and Stone Cold is a fun brawl as Austin uses his truck to destroy the nation and retain the IC title, but I don't think we've seen the last of this. HBK Shamrock is a tremendous match as both men brought the goods, and we get a big surprise in Owen Hart's return as he pastes HBK at the end of the match. Overall, this was the lowest point for Dirty F following Montreal, and 1997 is over. As 1998 dawns, the light will break the darkness, and Dirty F would never look back.
Austin Fiff.
Mr. Fiff.
He finishes it off. Personal opinion here, but I feel like this should have been the last pay-per-view with the In Your House title. Had a good 3-year run with it, but time to move on. Don't have much to say about this show. Austin Rock was more of a brawl than a classic Intercontinental title match, but good for what it was. These two could do better. Amazing how a truck could fit through the gorilla position. Michael Shamrock I found to be okay but boring. Shamrock was not ready to be a main eventer. Owen's surprise attack at the end wouldn't mean much after the event, as Owen will go another path but with another DX member.
All right, so there's your feedback to wrap up In Your House, D-Generation X. Just a quick point about the feedback. I posted this in the thread. We love your feedback. The thing is, though, as these shows go into 1998 and, you know, things get a little wild, 98, 99, 2000. Yeah. The show is going to be long. There's a lot to talk about. A lot goes down on TV, a lot of fun facts. We need the feedback to be a little bit shorter, guys. We love reading it, and it's been our hook since day one. We want to read it. We like having the involvement of the nation, so we have two options. One is that you guys can just shorten it just a little bit so we can include everyone. Second option is you can keep them long, and instead of reading everyone's, we can just rotate and read a handful each show. I mean, I'd prefer to read them all. I think it's good to get everyone's voice in. We don't need the results of the match. We talk about that throughout the whole show. So you don't need to tell us who won, how they won, the finish. Just give your thoughts quick, a quick bullet. You know, look at Hinchy's this time. You know, that's a format, but maybe just a little bit shorter. But that is a format, that's fine. Just a quick thought. We just don't need the finish and how they won. You know, same with Steve Riddle's, I thought was a good one, and Dave Hall. Well, this gives thoughts on the show, and you can hit the topic of each match, but you just don't need to explain to us how the match goes. Because we're reviewing the show for 2 hours, so just a little bit of feedback of our own there for you guys. We want to keep being able to integrate that into the show as much as possible. But as these reviews get longer and as they get meatier, it's just going to be harder to take 40 minutes to read through your feedback. So, and, you know, this show is a little bit light, I think, just because of the nature of this pay-per-view. But as we get into 98, we know you guys are going to start bringing the heat again. So just keep that in mind when you're writing your feedback. We don't want to get to the point where we have to start picking and choosing. I'd rather just read everyone's.
I agree. I concur. Yeah, you know, some guys, like, I forgot, you know, some people do, like, their high point, their low point. Yeah, a couple of high points, a couple of low points. It's all you need to do. Just pick what you like the best, what you hated the best, or hated the most, I guess. And I agree with JR. We don't want to be like, well, this guy's too long. We don't want to read his. We don't want to do that. We want to read everybody. So just keep that in mind. We get into, as he said, the next 3 years of pay-per-views are not going to be quickies. The quickies are done. The 95 two-hour shows, they're done.
Right.
These are going to get meatier, as he said. More fun facts, a lot of background. We start getting into debuts and defection, all that kind of jazz. These vaults are going to easily get to 2 hours, and you know, that's a long time. So just a little concise. You guys are smart. You're all great members of the board, and you do a great job of writing, and you know how to, you can get your thoughts out as best you can. So keep it up.
All right, so there is 1997, Scott, officially in the books now. We do have one last piece of business, but we'll get to that in a moment. Yes. This Wednesday, we have headlines. We're going to talk a lot of wrestling news we're going to get to. A lot's happened these past five or six weeks, so we're going to try and track back and catch as much as we've missed. We are going to preview Hell in a Cell. We're going to do our predictions, and we're going to hit the news. We're going to hit the some baseball updates. We're going to go over the NFL. We'll bring Kyle Forchetti in to go around the league. And do, of course, our Week 8 predictions for that as well. We're also going to talk a little bit about WrestleMania and our plans, Scott, where we're doing, and what we can try and coordinate, hopefully, with the nation as well. So we'll talk about that Wednesday, too. Also, remember to get your contest, start getting your order ready and submit that as soon as November 1st turns when the calendar hits. We got to get that contest up and running. So if you want in, start putting your order together and get your money over to Jay.
Yes.
So.
And now, incidentally, JR and I have made some nice donations. We do not count, of course.
Right.
Our donations
do not
count. We're just doing it, A, because we love Jay, and B, because you know, it's a good reward. Incidentally, JR, baseball update. I am smiling from ear to ear right now.
Yes.
Bottom of the seventh inning at Candlestick Park. Giants 7, Cardinals zip.
Yeah, that's Cardinals. Well, they were up 3-1, huh? So they choked that away. Reminiscent of 1996, and they choked away a 3-1 lead to Jay Hinchy's Braves.
And honestly, from a competition perspective, I like Tigers-Giants. I think it's a better series.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
Yeah.
In football, the Bears are pounding the Lions 13-0. The Lions have just said nothing on offense. So
we'll talk about the Lions on Wednesday with Kyle.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. I got a lot to talk about. Kyle's picks not looking too good. All right, so with that, next week we're going to do a year in review of 1997 on Monday, and I don't want to jinx. I don't want to jinx this, Scott, but a third chance here. We've lined it up, and he's vowed to be here. Kevin Kelly should hopefully be here Monday night.
Well, tonight's the last debate, so everybody with their issues with debates, and hopefully he's feeling better. We love you, K-Squared. You know we do.
So we can't wait to talk to Kevin. We're going to run right through. It almost worked out because now we can hit the whole year of 97 and everything. All our reviews are in the books, so in a way it kind of worked out. Kevin will join us Monday. We're going to go right through the entire year in the WWF of 1997. We get a lot of topics to talk to him about. And then next Wednesday, we have a little Halloween treat for you guys. We'll keep that under wraps until Wednesday night. So, a little Halloween special. But all right, let's wrap things up, Scott. Thank you again, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed this trip through 1997, wrapping up with In Your House with DX. We'll be back Wednesday night with headlines, Kyle Forchetti, and a whole bunch of other things. So, for my PIC, Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. Have a great night, PTB Nation. We'll talk to you Wednesday with the headlines.
Screw you, Vince.
Screw you, young man. I think he's so smart.
Halloween, 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 Halloween. Tiddle-umlings everywhere. Life's no fun without a good scare.
That's our job.
But we're not mean.
In our town of Halloween.
In this town.
Don't we love it now?
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Skeleton Jack might catch you in the back and
scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin.
This is Halloween, everybody scream.
Don't you please make way for a very special guy.
Walnut Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king.
Now this is Halloween, this is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween.
This town we call home. Everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.